Hi everyone, it's Mandy here and you're listening to Yachting International Radio and Inspirations with Manda J. Welcome, and today I have my friend Greg on, who's a flight surgeon, and he's been involved with the medical support of the space shuttle Soyuz, was it the Russian program, and all sorts of other things, and originally trained, did some medical training in Montserrat, which is an area we all look at and sometimes visit and sail around. So we met recently working on a super yacht program together, and I found you really inspiring and I wanted to get you on the show. But how about you introduce yourself? Who are you? What makes you so fabulous and on my show?
Well, I certainly don't know about that part. My name's Greg Pennell. I am a cross-trained family practice doctor, and I'm also what's called a flight surgeon, both on the civilian side and also for the United States Air Force Reserve. I'm a pilot. I'm a 40-year pilot, so I have a pretty heavy background in flight medicine. We work with the Federal Aviation Administration, working cases for them, and we do in-flight support. And now we do shipboard support for this particular customer. So we do a lot of different things. We have medical kits for aircraft, and we have a normal baric hypoxia lab. We basically, if it's flight medicine, we do it.
That's incredible. And I'm really interested in the space program because personally, I'm, you know, having studied extreme medicine and extreme sports for a long time and being an avid sailor like everyone that's listening today, we've all had so much interest in space. But to be honest, this may sound naive, but when I was looking at career paths, you know, I thought just going, you can go and do a space course. And I thought, well, you know, yeah, that's fun and it'd be interesting, but what's the point? But we're really quickly looking at space travel as, you know, as a vacation. And you've been involved in many shuttles. 16, is it? 16?
No, I worked 24 space shuttle missions, and I don't even know how many Soyuz missions I worked. I didn't even count those. Scott Phillips, that you're going to interview also at some point, he worked 23. I came into the space shuttle program on the rescue side with Department of Defense Human Spaceflight in 2000, actually just a little after 9/11. Actually, I was training on the space shuttle on Tuesday, 9/11, which is a queer story in and of itself. And then luckily, we did a good job. Scott and I did a good job, and we progressed up to the point where we're actually the fun part, where we were the only reservist who were ever trained in to run the rescue operations from the medical aspect of it in the operations center at Kennedy Space Center, which was an amazing opportunity. We got to see the shuttle land from the shuttle landing facility many times. We got to watch it launch from the main facility at the shuttle landing facility many times. It was an incredible experience, and we learned a lot. And thank God we learned a little bit about maritime too, because the we were working with the Navy and Coast Guard folks, so we got to learn about things like Blue Forces Tracker, and we got to learn about Navy capabilities. And thank God we did, because it's come in helpful for this current project.
So, yeah, tell us, like, what sort of things how do you even prepare people or prepare to be on the rescue team of a space shuttle mission? What sort of things do you have to take into account? What's happening to the body when we go into space? Or are you looking at more the crashes and the trauma?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. The medical support for spaceflight, and my God, it's exploding right now. Everything from, you know, what SpaceX is doing to Boeing's doing to NASA's doing, to, you know, to Bigelow Aerospace, to all the various different companies that are getting into it. From at that time in 2000, the shuttle essentially and the Soyuz were the only games in town at that point. So we started out by learning about how rescuing astronauts was done. We learned about space physiology. There's a lot to space physiology. Our body does a lot of changing. And when we go on to orbit for any length of time, from fluid shifts to eye changes, which are still being studied, to orthopedic changes, bone density. There's a whole gamut there. But it was separated out into the rescue side, which was us, and then the crew surgeons, which were essentially the family doctors for the astronaut for each space shuttle mission. And there were generally two family doctors for each space shuttle missions, which would follow the crew generally of seven, right from the time that they were assigned to the launch to the mission.
Wow. And then I hate to ask, but we're all curious, what about the rescue side of it? What are you preparing for?
Well, I mean, I came in after Challenger, and thank God Saturday, I say this in the nicest way, when Columbia disintegrated, coming into the atmosphere, that wasn't a mission I was working, thank God. Matter of fact, and the reason I wasn't working it, because I was working a military weekend, a regular military weekend. And we prepared for many different scenarios. In general, we had eight different modes, which were everything from a pad abort. In other words, we had to get the astronauts out, the astronauts injured, have to get them out, to RTLS to return to landing site. There was whole eight modes that we had to know and had to cover and had to be prepared for. It was pretty extensive planning.
Absolutely, because would anyone even remotely survive that?
There were scenarios, yeah. After Challenger, the parachute system with the pole, you can call a lot of different things, the pole that came out the side of the shuttle to allow the astronauts to parachute out. But that had a very, very narrow parameter of use. The shuttle was not a very durable vehicle from the perspective of if it was going to land anywhere other than either one of the sites like Edwards or White Sands or the shuttle landing facility, a hard runway, it was probably going to be a yard sale and you were going to have injuries. So it was, I mean, there were survivable scenarios. Obviously Challenger was not one of them. Columbia was not, unfortunately. Those were two probably completely preventable accidents, but I won't talk about that. But yeah, there were survivable scenarios.
Interesting. Yeah, so I'm looking into research for marine medicine and high performance sailing, you know, we've got huge loads, our gear is very high tech, maybe not quite as high tech as the space shuttles, but we look at, say, Formula One for the impacts, right, and the loads. You know, so when you're preparing for space rescue and space shuttle rescue, I mean, where do you get the research from? Like, is there another faculty, like I've gone to, Grand Prix racing to get my information from, because there isn't that much around for high performance yachting. Where do you start looking for your research to prepare for this?
Well, there are universities that have done a lot of research. There's been a huge amount of papers done, when the International Space Station, and even before, I mean, research on human capabilities literally started from the Mercury program. I mean, it started out from the very, very first program and, progressed through Gemini, through Apollo, through Space Shuttle. The International Space Station gave just a huge quantum leap and continues to give a huge quantum leap in research capabilities into human endurance, things that we just can't experiment with in 1G, that we have to be in microgravity to be able to study. But there's papers literally every month in our journals on new research into space medicine. As we're preparing to go back to the moon in the not too distant future, and then ultimately we're preparing to become a multi-planet species by going to Mars, hopefully in our lifetime, or in my lifetime. research is ongoing. It continues. And, we're trying to figure out ways to make it as safe as possible to get people to another planet and deliver them live and healthy.
Yeah, I just find this fascinating. And what do you think is the future with space travel as a vacation, as a holiday? So if I want to go to space, and I've got the money and I approach you guys, what are you going to do to prepare my body for space travel? How could I start training today?
Well, that's a great question. And the universities, in conjunction with the Federal Aviation Administration, have really looked into this. University of Texas Medical Branch has done a lot of research on what medical conditions can you safely fly to space for short duration, moderate duration, long duration. The standards for that, or at least the notional standards, and of course there'll be a lot of research as we go forward, as we move forward into passenger spaceflight, in what iteration, that'll continue. I mean, you've got, not to elaborate on this too much because I don't know how much time you've got, but you've got whole different scenarios. It's one scenario for the for example, Virgin Galactic, where you're basically doing a parabolic flight. You're going up, experiencing about 4 minutes of zero G, and then you're coming back down. Obviously, the preparation for that is less than a once around. Let's say you want to do a single orbit flight, bring them back down, or you want to take them up to whatever floating hotel, whoever gets up there first. If you want to go to the International Space Station, it's going to be for rent. And I think the price, if I remember correctly, was $35,000 a night for that, was the planned price for that. So you better save your Hilton points up for that. And then Bert Rutan, who you may not be familiar with, we talked with him some years ago, and he thought one of the next tourist flights was going to be a once around the moon, similar to Apollo 8, where you basically go to low Earth orbit, you possibly transfer to another vehicle, go out, do a figure eight around the moon, which is going to take you about 4 or 5 days out and back, and then come back and then come back down. There's a lot of different scenarios. Now, how do you prepare for that? Well, what you do is you do research on, based on what you've got, what you know about existing chronic disease. I'll use one example, diabetes. We know that diabetics are probably going to have significant issues with spaceflight, even if they're well controlled. There was a presentation at the Aerospace Medicine Association a few years back, and UTMB, University of Texas Medical Branch, was showing what particular disease processes, chronic disease processes, we're going to have more problems than other. Well, diabetes is one of them. So how do you prepare for that? Well, first of all, you got to see if the person can handle G's going to orbit. Can you handle 4 G's sustained for 8-9 minutes to get to low Earth orbit? Can you handle the low oxygen tension? So you need to put them into a hypobaric or normal baric chamber, see if they can handle altitude. We do that. Our company AirDocs actually does that, and we're working with another company. We're trying to work with another company. We did some work with them before where we provide them the actual physical checkout, the normal baric training. They provide the zero G and try to see if someone's capable of going to flight. Way long answer. I'm sorry. I apologize, Amanda.
Oh, no, I'm captivated. Never say sorry. This is so interesting. Absolutely. Yeah. So if people wanted to see how they feel about experiencing the G's, sorry if I'm making, this language sound a little bit naive, but if you wanted to experience how it feels with the G, without the G's, which is gravity, I'm assuming, is that right? Yeah, just checking. You can contact you, confirming that I had the right lingo and basically saying that if I want to see how my body reacts and if I'm fit enough and got the mindset and the physical ability to go into space, that I'll contact you and you can set me up with one of these chambers.
We can, our company, we can do the physical exam for the FAA standards. We can do the hypoxia training to make sure you can handle the reduced oxygen tension. There's another company which does the parabolic flights called Zero G. They do a wonderful job with exposing people to microgravity. That's, I'm sure you've seen that in the aircraft where you're floating around inside the aircraft as they do the parabolas. We had a chance to do that, testing out some telemetry equipment. I will tell you that was an absolutely awesome experience floating around inside the chamber of a 727. That was a blast. I wish we could have done more of it.
What an experience. And of course, the question on my lips that I just have to ask is, do you see a future where there's going to be hospitals on the in outer space to go with these hotels?
There's going to have to be. Oh. You know, I keep thinking of Stanley Kubrick's movie 2001, and of course, at that point, you had a floating hotel. And I honestly, God, never thought we would see that in my lifetime, and now I'm almost positive that we are going to see that. You know, in my lifetime, I'm absolutely sure we're going to see a man on Mars in my lifetime. And I'm pretty sure if I want to spend enough of my children's inheritance, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get at some point or another on a passenger flight, I might get an opportunity to go into space. And I think that's all going to be doable. And the nice thing is, as more companies come into it, the price will go down pretty dramatically. Bert Rutan, the aviation designer, right now I think Virgin Galactic's price for that flight is like $200,000, if I remember correctly. And Mr. Rutan had indicated when we had talked with him, he thought as more people get into it, he thought the price point would probably get down to about 10% of that. And there's going to be a lot of people who can, you know, can afford $20,000 to, you know, be able to, you know, do a parabolic flight and get 4 minutes of, you know, floating around inside the Virgin Galactic cabin.
Yeah, I mean, if they spend people spend that money in our industry on, you know, on charters and yachts and doorknobs and wine all the time. So
exactly,
it's pretty exciting, really. You know, we could get together and we could plan a yacht charter with a trip to space, and that you could have the most fabulous holiday ever.
Wow. That would be totally amazing. I mean, man's journey, not to wax philosophic, but man's journey is, you know, if we don't destroy ourselves, man's journey is really, really just getting started. It also provides a good reason for us to take good care of ourselves, because we're about to make the next steps into space, and, you know, making man a multiplanetary species, which is where we have to get to at some point. And it's just awful exciting right now.
It's so exciting. I've got another question, because, as you know, I'm really interested in sailing and solo sailing and working in really remote environments. Something that really kept me going over lockdown was, you know, reading about how astronauts deal with isolation, because I thought, well, you know, what's the closest thing? Even in Antarctica, we've got scientists and medics and doctors sort of in a larger group than a couple of astronauts in space. And so you've obviously met some astronauts. What are they like? Are they normal, or are they a bit different because they've dealt with so much isolation? How would you could you describe a general astronaut?
Next question. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. I've met about four astronauts that I've met, you know, and spent enough time with to kind of understand them. They're all scary, bright people. Mm-hmm. You know, uniquely qualified. We have one of our doctors right now. I can't use his name, but he is he's in the selection process for as an astronaut candidate for NASA. They call their astronaut candidates ASCANs, believe it or not. They are all brilliant, brilliant people, but they're also very, very normal people, too. How do I say this? And hopefully nobody from NASA Public Affairs is going to listen to this.
No,
they're normal people. They have the same stresses, and long duration spaceflight is, I mean, it already has at times proved very taxing on people, you know, and absent a faster propulsion system, such as the ion propulsion system that they're working on. I mean, the Mars flight's going to be 6 months. And man, working out the psychological profiles, working out the, you know, the enclosures to make it habitable and being able to work that out, those are going to be tough things to deal with. They are tough things to deal with. I was at the shuttle landing facility, and I was talking with a younger lady than I am who had been on the International Space Station for a fair amount of time. And we were having a very nice conversation. And she said, you know, with excitement in her, wouldn't you like to go to the International Space Station for a year? And I said, you know, well, if it had a tennis court, I might consider it. But I'm not sure I would, I'm not sure I would handle it very well. You know, and where, you know, other than telemetry, if you cannot get a psychiatric, you know, consult, you know, in real time, this could be a real problem. All I can say is they're very, very smart people, very, very well vetted by NASA and the other, and, you know, the other companies that are vetting their astronauts, but they're also human too, and they're also subject to normal human pressures. We'll see how they do. I hope they do well.
And with the psychology and mindset, because, you know, that's something I'm really passionate in, is the psychology of, you know, an extreme sportsman and people that are attracted to harsh environments like myself and you at times when there's a tennis court. I'll let you know when there's one down at Antarctica. There probably is. what sort of preparation do they need? Do they go through training like Navy SEAL kind of training, or, you know, how do they prepare themselves for that kind of isolation? Do you get much to do with that side of things, or is that more psychology, psychiatric?
From that perspective, no, but I have done flight physicals on people who are working the Antarctic mission. Mm-hmm. I've actually probably done a pretty fair amount of them over the years. They usually have a second class FAA medical for that. You know, it's different for the people who are flying down there and flying in and out of theater down there. It's different from that than the people who have, you know, have to stay there for long periods of time, you know, over the tough winter when it's, you know, impossible to evacuate out someone. You probably remember not too many years ago, there was one of the female scientists that had a medical issue that was, I mean, it was serious, you know, and if she had been in the, you know, anywhere in, you know, north, she would have been evacuated out to medical care, but it was hard to get her out of there. You know, the medical side, you know, it's pre-vetting and then, you know, having the contingency plans to get them out of there or treat them on site if you have to. I mean, there's various different scenarios of treatment that you have to come up in those environments. You know, the psychological part of it with the isolation, there are people who can handle that. There are people who can't. Yeah. I pretty much know I would not probably be one of those that could. I'm kind of an open spaces type guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you spent a week with me. Do you think I've got what it takes?
I'm sure you do. You're adventurous. You know, obviously highly intelligent. You know, you've forgotten more about shipboard medicine and the like than I know. But we're learning quickly. The amount of, for this particular project that we're working on, that we met in Borella on to work on together, we had to do a lot of research. Luckily, we had a few months of research to contact all our Navy and Coast Guard guys and get spun up on this. I mean, our primary forte is aviation medicine. It's not maritime, but we're learning quick. I'm sure you would do fine in those environments.
Yeah, well, if you want to come on Manda Beaver's next space expedition, you'll get 10% off if you comment below.
There are many things in my lifetime that I would like to do that I have not gotten to do because, unfortunately, we run a pretty fair sized business and a 24/7 operation. And yeah, there's lots of things I would do. I will say this much. I got my sailing, I think, pretty much out of my system on Lake Huron when I was young, you know, erasing scorpions and sunfishes and a little time with lightnings. And after getting dumped off the boat a few times, it's like, you know, I thought, yeah, it's maybe not be my best endeavor.
So you'd rather go to space for a quick flight than sail across the Atlantic?
Yeah, probably yes. Probably yes, ma'am. Although I would love to, you know, this particular boat that we were cooperating on, they're bringing that across the Atlantic at some point in the next month or so. I would love to be on that.
So you're more of a yacht charter kind of guy, Bahamas, palm trees, and a cocktail.
No, I'm not. I'm in the Air Force side. I'm what's called a crew dog. The idea of being able to be on that boat, and I will tell you, I would spend probably, because the medicine is very easy for us. Okay, we know that.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know what the cruising time is across the Atlantic. I guess it's like 10, 14 days or something like that for them. Within one day, I would be learning everyone else's job. I just couldn't sit still. I'd be in the galley learning how to help, you know, sous chef, to, you know, help prepare food. I'd be with the other guys learning, you know, how do you do your job? Tell me how I can help you. It's just our nature as crew dogs to want to learn everybody else's thing. I mean, learn as much as you possibly can about what someone else does.
Oh, I love that. So anyone that's watching that wants a crew member that's worked with with all sorts of shuttle programs and as a qualified air doctor that wants help in the galley or making up cabins, you can also contact Greg and his details will be below. You can get the trip of a lifetime.
If you want your cardiac arrest run or your myocardial infarction run, I'm the guy to come to. But I know fore, port, starboard, aft, and I think I can do ahoy, mate. I can do that pretty well, too. Other than that, I'm going to have to learn a lot.
Just always never ask to go to the toilet. You have to say, can I go to the head? And always take your shoes off when you're getting on board the boat. You'll be sweet.
Okay, good. All right, important safety notes. I got those, too. I'll write those two down.
We should do work experience with each other sometime. That'd be fun. I'll take you sailing. You take me to space.
That would be interesting. We only have so much time on the surface of this planet. The bottom line is to experience as much as you possibly can while you can.
Well, Dr. Greg from the Air Docs, it's been wonderful to have you on the show. I'm so honored, and I'd love to have you on again. It's been such a great chat. You're so inspiring, and I'm really privileged that you spent some time with me today.
Thanks. It was a pleasure working with you guys in Borella. It was a great experience. Both Dr. Phillips and myself, we certainly learned a lot from you. Hopefully, we were able to impart just a little bit, you know, of our side of the house, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime. Thanks, everyone. You're listening to Yachting International Radio, and I'll be back next Monday with Inspirations with Manda Jay.